ghouls. Son of a bitch, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
now?
Funny little green ghouls.
What? Like in movies and cartoons? What?
No, green ghouls, buddy.
Don't write ghouls.
I'm not.
I turn it this way so I can see the numbers.
Numbers.
Oh, you can see the numbers?
I think so.
Those are upside down numbers.
All right. We are Area 215 doing something a little weird and a little different.
We're in a cemetery.
Yup.
Happy Samhain.
Yeah.
Happy Samhain, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I said that mean. I really hope you all have a good holiday.
Yeah. Good holiday. Good spoopy times. So we're obviously doing something a little different. The recording quality is definitely going to be different. So fuck.
Hope that doesn't bug you.
Yeah, sure, it's fine. Cool. So we are in Laurel Hill Cemetery. We're in one of the oldest graveyards, I think is what it is. Oh wait, we didn't introduce ourselves.
Oh yeah.
I'm Sam Hot Vodka.
I'm Aaron the 2-inch Punisher.
I'm Batman.
Yeah, so here we are in the cemetery, doing some weird stuff. There's a little bee hanging out with us. What are you doing here, bee?
It thinks you can pollinate my journal.
They're being nice.
So we're in Laurel Hill. Laurel Hill, I don't know where it lines up in, like, oldness, but it's on the East Coast, so it's gotta be kind of cold. There's also a human walking by, and I feel weird talking when there's humans walking by.
It's fine. We can just keep doing this.
Yeah, so Laurel Hill is about 78 acres of land now. It's divided into north, south, and central, and it was all founded at different times. It's a cemetery that's in North Philly, right off the Schuylkill. North Philly? Why does it say North Philly? Isn't this West Philly?
It's Northwest.
Northwest? Northwest Philly? Sure. It's right on the Schuylkill, which that just got flooded a couple weeks ago. If you want to see what it looks like, look up dumbass in a tube floating down the Schuylkill.
Yeah.
And you'll see Philly's finest. Yeah, so in 1835, this guy John J. Smith, who was a Quaker librarian, realized that the population of Philly was growing so quickly that they wouldn't have the means to bury their dead, and he needed to bury his daughter. So he went to one of the local cemeteries, and he was like, holy shit, we need more land for this. So he set out to found a rural cemetery. He linked up with these dudes, Nathan Dunn and Benjamin Richard, and this guy Franklin Brown. They purchased the former estate of Laurel Hill in 1836. So it took them about a year to get this land, but the first land that they bought was about 32 acres, again, right along the Schuylkill. Once it was used for farming, a boarding school, and a tavern.
Ooh.
Yeah. In 1978, Friends of Laurel Hill and West Laurel Hill Cemetery was formed. And it was finally designated as a National Historic Landmark in 1998. One of the coolest things about Laurel Hill is that they offer green burials. They're one of the largest natural cemeteries on the East Coast. I don't really know where they fall in line, but I remember at one point hearing that they are the largest on the East Coast. So they have a natural sanctuary, which... This was just our quick overview of Laurel Hill, but I do want to kind of like talk about their green burials just in case anyone's kind of interested. It's pretty fucking cool. So if you look up Nature Cemetery on laurelhillcemetery.org, it's a natural burial section which only permits biodegradable or environmentally friendly caskets, shrouds, or urns. All the graves are hand-dug for minimal environmental impact, and they seek to preserve indigenous grasses, trees, and shrubs. They specialize in green services and non-toxic chemicals. So if, like, you or anyone you know are interested in throwing that in maybe an advance directive or some sort of will or something, or I guess that would be the testament, look into their green burials. It's kind of pretty cool. But yeah, Sam has some information on some of the people that were buried here. There's some, like, semi-famous Philly people buried here. And then we're going to get into a little bit of spooky pasta, spoopy spaghetti, creepy lasagna.
So, yeah, we're just doing, like, a quick little brief where we are. We'll eventually dive a little bit deeper, probably into Laurel Hill at some point. But yeah, we just wanted to be here for the season. So, yeah, we have... Harry Callis, which is the
What a dumb name.
The famous Philadelphia Phillies broadcaster.
That guy's name?
Yeah.
He's going to hate you.
Harry Callis?
He's going to hate you.
What parents hated him that much to give him that name?
Yeah. He started broadcasting for the Philadelphia Phillies from 1971 up until his death in 2009. So he's a relatively recent person. Some of these other people, I don't fucking know who they are, but we got Thomas McKean of McKean Street here.
Of McKean Street.
And then we got David Rittenhouse of Rittenhouse.
Yeah, you know that guy.
Yeah, that dick.
He's like, just make it all expensive.
So this one was cool. Laura Matilda Town. Town was an educator and abolitionist. Thank you. I don't know how to fucking talk. And homeopathic physician from Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Yeah. So apparently there's also a bunch of Titanic people here.
There's 6 Titanic passengers that I just read that on the Wikipedia page real quick. I don't know if they died on the Titanic and then were buried here or if they lived past it, but That, I don't know. I only saw the movie. I hate that movie. I thought it was just the one guy lived. I have no idea.
The one lady.
No, there's totally a bunch of people who got on floaty boats and they lived.
Yeah, like,
all right, there's a lot of them, and 6 of them are buried here.
They dropped the diamond in the ocean. Britney Spears. Come on.
Britney Spears?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I went down to the ocean and got it back for you.
I thought that old lady dropped it in the ocean.
Well, I went down and got it.
Oh, you shouldn't have.
Like, that's not what I would say to my partner. I would be like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, that's
where are you hiding that money?
Yeah,
also, how did you know exactly where it was in the fucking cold-ass ocean?
Don't they know where the Titanic is?
But it's particularly, like, the necklace, though, is what I mean. Like, it probably wasn't, like...
Oh, yeah, no, because it was further away, and then, like, drift, and then...
Yeah, the Titanic moves every once in a while because of the currents. So, Titanic. Like, where something sinks doesn't mean that that's exactly where it is.
And people wonder why I don't want to go in the water.
All right. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's get into it, I guess. We have some, like, fun creepypastas that we wrote, and Batman, of course, made us some fancy...
Bloodies.
Bloody pasta spaghetti.
Bloody pasta spaghetti.
I'm not going to tell you all of the stuff that's in it, but a couple of abnormal things, I guess. Basil-infused Faber vodka. There is a zombie finger in there, non-edible, but you can clean it and put it on your dingy.
Dingy!
Use it with your tiny hands.
Tiny hands!
Garlic to keep away the, vampires. And then my friends make witching hour sauce. So I used a couple different witching hour sauces in there.
How can you get witching hour sauce? Just, like, go to their Instagram?
So, you can go to their Instagram and order through them. They have a website, or they sell it at PBC and at Herman's Coffee, too.
Yeah, they're fucking great. They're really, fun. Really delish.
All right. Yeah, they're fun.
We never rock, paper, scissors to see who's going to read their story first.
Oh, right, ready?
And I did bloodies because I wanted to make pasta sauce for your creepy pasta.
Creepy pasta sauce. All right.
Ready?
Wait, fuck. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Alright. Are we going? Yeah, you go.
Oh, that's what that means?
Yeah.
Okay. Fuck.
So, Hot Vodka and I both wrote stories. Hot Vodka wrote a very fun one, and I wrote up a comic book that I've been thinking about since I was 13. So I'm very excited for this.
Alright, bear with us as we read through this. I've read this out loud a couple times and I still stumble over my words.
And what is the name of this creepy spoops?
Fuck, I didn't name it.
That's a great name.
I'll name it later. Alright.
That's also a great name.
Alright, this story is called I'll Name It Later.
Hasta la pasta.
Yeah, hasta la pasta. Alright, here we go. It was a brisk November morning. The chill in the air seems to nip at the skin like little teeth. The perfect weather for the annual Slasher's spa weekend. Every November, after all of their killing and thrilling, the boys take a well-deserved break to the middle-of-nowhere spa retreat cabin. The old cabin is set up with saunas, mud baths, and scrubs, just what they need to decompress after their busy season. Jason loads the van with the necessities, while Freddy naps in the back seat, dreaming of the weekend of exfoliation. Michael looks over the map to make sure they're taking the roads less traveled, And Leatherface fusses over how many articles of custom clothing he thinks he needs. Though not normally morning entities, the boys are eager to get on the road and munch on some of Mrs. Voorhees' famous sandwiches. Soon enough, they hit the road, letting out a few giddy grunts and cackles of childlike joy and excitement. The ride to the middle of nowhere cabin is easy enough if you know the way, but their passage seems longer. They're not a chatty bunch besides Freddy, but he sleeps most of the trip. They drive for some time without making any stops and in complete silence.
Not even the
I just thought it was funnier that they just...
Oh, he's taking some time off.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Just making sure.
It's hard to make those
I wasn't
happen.
Sure if that would just, like, happened naturally.
Yeah, just
follow them.
You know,
like cicadas?
A little bit, yeah.
The forest they travel through becomes more dense and the roads get bumpier, but Michael drives with impeccable focus and persistence. They drive through the brush until the darkness begins to swallow the sky. The van speeds up and breaks through the dismal backwood roads into a clearing. Leatherface begins to squeal, a usual omen that symbolizes their arrival. There, in front of them, is a large and sinister cabin. The cabin sits in the center of a large clearing surrounded by the dark forest they had just embarked through. Freddy, awake, begins to tap his claws on the window. They have arrived.
What, like fucking nails?
Yeah.
Like manicured nails?
Yee.
So sassy.
The boys quickly rush out of the van and into the cabin. The cabin is beautiful inside with high ceilings housing large antler chandeliers and everything hardwood. There is a faint smell of eucalyptus in the air. The outside is purposely deceiving and decrepit, keeping anyone who stumbles upon it out. The layout is pretty simple, two beds in each room on the second floor. The mud baths are on the first floor, same as the common room in the kitchen. The saunas are in the basement, and there's a large hot tub on the back deck. Jason and Michael saunter upstairs to claim their beds, while Leatherface goes to get changed. Freddy eagerly roams the halls, checking out each room. Everything is just as he remembers. He wanders into the living room and quickly notices something the others missed during their excitement. The fireplace in the center of the common room is black with soot and warm, like it had been recently lit. What do you think this is all about? I thought everyone knew better than to come here this weekend. Freddy yells to Jason, trying to show him what he's discovered. Jason ignores him. They're still working out their old grievances, so this doesn't surprise Freddy. He decides to chalk it up as nothing and walks away cursing to himself. In the meantime, everyone begins to settle in, and their weekend getaway can finally start. Most of the boys leave their tempers behind for the weekend, but some habits are hard to break. While picking beds, Jason and Michael find themselves fighting over the same bed. A small scuffle arises.
Just share it, am I right, boys?
Yeah, share it. I mean, that's eventually what would have happened. A small scuffle arises, resulting in some rips in Michael's jumpsuit. Leatherface, being skilled with his hands, decides to sew Michael's tears for him, giving Michael some time to cool off. Ooh. Leatherface sits by the fireplace in the common room and gets to work on Michael's favorite threads. As Leatherface is sewing, he starts experiencing a weird and indescribable feeling, indescribable to him at least. The boys are, of course, predators.
Yeah, because he's so articulate.
The boys are, of course, predators, numb to their instincts of fear. So he ignores this feeling, and before long, he is finished with his project. Leatherface admires his work. Suddenly, he hears a faint squeak. He looks around, but no one else is in the room with him. As Leatherface is folding Michael's jumpsuit, he hears the squeak again, but this time closer. He jumps up and grabs the chainsaw, but no one else is around. Leatherface decides to investigate, but before he has the chance to react, something creeps out of the darkness and grabs him before he can even make a sound, which I just realized now I should have fixed that. It's fine. His chainsaw and the jumpsuit lie on the floor, the only indication that he was even there. A faint squeak echoes in the room and creeps out to the rest of the cabin. Some time has passed, and a naked and disgruntled Michael is tired of waiting for Leatherface to bring him his clothes. So he saunters down the hallway towards the common room. As Michael enters the room, he discovers his jumpsuit had been neatly folded on an end table near the fireplace.
So sweet.
Leatherface's chainsaw still lies on the ground, but Michael can't seem to find Leatherface. So he decides to reclothe, because why not? Tired of hanging out with his wang out.
It's hard to hang out with your wang out in November
I'm just
in a
him
cabin.
Walking around like covering his dick with his butcher knife.
I'm not even like...
That's kind of cute.
I didn't even like, picture him covering it up. I just thought he was just going to wang out.
Yeah.
He's
got no shame.
Yeah. As Michael leaves the common room, he discovers...
Wait. Sorry. Are we sure that he has no shame? Or is it that's why he murders everyone while they're fucking? Like, he has a tiny little...
micropenis situation.
Micropenis? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just pictured him, like, flopping around. So.
I don't know. I'm just saying it's possible to be insecure. But go on.
It is possible. Yeah. I mean, like, he kills people. I mean, so he I would definitely say he's pitchforked definitely...
some people while they were working.
Yeah.
Right. He's definitely insecure.
As Michael leaves the common room, he discovers a scruff of orange hair on the sleeve of his jumpsuit. He examines it meticulously, but can't figure out what kind of hair it is. Could very easily be that demonic doll or even that fucking clown. He puts it in his pocket and heads for the hot tub. Time for this boy to soak his tired bones. A fully clothed Michael enters the steaming hot tub and sits there in silence, staring at now... the moonlit wilderness. An hour passes, and Michael is still soaking. It's quiet outside. Most creatures have learned to steer clear of the cabin, but it's more quiet than usual. Michael is so tranced by the night that he hardly notices the hot tub has gotten significantly hotter. As he steeps his troubles away, something demonic lurks in the shadows, just like it had in the common room. It creeps up behind Michael and grabs his head, shoving him into the almost boiling water. The creature has turned the temperature of the tub to a scalding hot degree.
Can you just say instant karma? He did that in part two.
That's the point. Michael's body drowns and his flesh burns, and yet this creature doesn't seem to be affected by the boiling vat that the hot tub has become. After a few moments, Michael's body goes limp. The creature retreats back into the shadows, on to hunt the rest of its prey. The first night of the spa weekend is always spent alone, so it's not very weird that the boys haven't run into each other all night.
I like that they have like a pattern to this.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing this for a while. Freddy has been lounging in the mud bath since they had first got there, and Jason has been lingering in and around the sauna most of the night. He assumes everyone else is doing their own thing, too. Jason sits in the sauna, clothed and wet, contemplating his mortality and the mortality of others. Or at least we can assume. He's not much for sharing his inner thoughts. It's taken hours, but Jason has finally decided to let his guard down, enough to lay in the sauna and fully relax. His breath is calm and rhythmic, lulling him into a meditative state. He doesn't feel the change in the air, nor the door to the sauna creeping open. Jason doesn't even hear the biggest sauna rock being moved out of its place, nor does he notice the enormous shadow standing above him. The shadow that isn't the shape of a human, but something in between. The shadow that has been hunting the boys for months. This thing that has been ushering in a new reign of chaos and annihilation. This thing that threatens damnation, the one that controls hellfire. If Jason would have only opened his eyes, he would have seen his murderer. Its fur stained red with blood, but still flaming orange in color. Its eyes gleaming. With the biggest rock from the sauna, the creature hammers it deep into Jason's chest, crushing his sternum with titan-like strength. Jason never stood a chance. Looming over his corpse and dripping with flesh...
I know what it is.
You've seen a horror movie before?
No, I know what it is. Go on.
Looming over his corpse and dripping with fresh blood, the creature moves on to his fourth and final victim. An exfoliating Freddy is realizing that something doesn't seem right in the house. He's been in the mud bath for some time, but he couldn't shake this weird feeling. As he's getting out of the tub, he hears a faint squeak. Freddy whips around, but no one is there. He remembers the fireplace. Another squeak. Freddy turns to face the door, and there in the doorway is a tall, pear-shaped shadow. I knew someone was here, Freddy says. I did it all for you, a voice echoes inside Freddy's head. Freddy screams, afraid to step toe-to-toe with the master of fright and fear, come into the light and face me. Oh, but you're wrong. I can tell you're afraid. Freddy isn't in the dream realm right now. Freddy has weaknesses. The creature steps into the light and positions itself in front of Freddy. The creature stands at around 7 to 7.5 foot tall, but round and almost soft-looking. Its eyes are large, beady, and soulless. Its mouth takes up most of its face and is twisted into a crooked and menacing smile. The strangest part of all is that the creature is covered in fiery orange fur from head to foot, adorned with burning orange eyes. What the fuck are you? Freddy stammers. The creature slaps its protruding purple belly button. It squeaks. Inside Freddy's head, he hears the creature whisper, "I am Gritty." Gritty pulls out Leatherface's leather face and puts it over its own face. Freddy screams, "What have you done to them?" Gritty lunges at Freddy. Freddy goes to slash him with his claws, but all Freddy is able to do is smack Gritty's stomach. It squeaks, and Gritty mimes laughter as it unveils its hand wearing Freddy's claw. "How did you get that?" Freddy yells. Gritty holds a clawed finger to his mouth to silence him. Before Freddy has any time to think, Gritty clutches onto him and pulls him close to his body, squeaking through Freddy's struggles. With one wet kiss, Freddy is engulfed inside the creature's enormous mouth, and Freddy blacks out. A disoriented and naked Freddy wakes up on the floor of the spa. He tries to recollect his thoughts, but his head feels like static. He stumbles over to the mirror and vomits into the sink. The vomit has traces of blood and orange fur. That's when everything comes rushing back to him. Panicked, he runs through the house, discovering all of his colleagues had indeed been brutally murdered. It really was all true. That really did all happen. As the memories begin flooding back, Freddy is suddenly aware that his back is plagued with stabbing pains. He rushes to a mirror, only to find that his back is covered in gashes and leaking black blood. He quickly realizes that there is a pattern to the slash marks. The pattern forms the words, "Gritty's bitch." Freddy knows the handiwork of his own claw. He hysterically searches for his pride and joy, the only thing that can save him now. A loud and threatening squeak comes from behind him. Freddy doesn't want to turn around. He glances into the mirror. There in the shadows are those burning orange eyes. Gritty emerges and hangs a clawed finger out of his mouth. Freddy screams, and the room goes black. The end.
Yes. Love it.
That is so good. Mine's like shit now, dude.
Shut up. I'm sure yours is great too. You told me your idea the other day. I was like, that's awesome.
That was fucking hilarious. That was almost as good as the Guy Fieri one.
Well, I started to think you're like orange, and then they're like could be the doll, it could be it, and then like I was like, no, very obvious, they're squeaking.
Very obvious to us, but I was wondering. Well, no, I wonder if it was obvious to other people.
No. Like, it wasn't.
No, it was fun watching Batman fucking realize what was happening. I watched you be like, I know what it is.
Yeah, and like you knew.
I knew
what, yeah, like who it was going to be.
Oh, but that was so much fun.
No, I loved it.
That was incredible. Dude.
I forgot that you were talking about the spa a while ago. No, it came out awesome.
Yeah, cool. I was actually kind of proud of that. I mean,
You should be, man. Are we going to put this up somewhere?
Yeah, probably put it up on the Patreon with all of my incorrections, grammar errors, and all of that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then you can read it to your friends on your spoopy nights.
Yeah.
In your cemeteries.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I was able to read that to everybody now.
Yeah, there's a lot of people coming through the cemetery. There's a lot.
There was nobody here when we first got here. Now everybody's like, time to stroll the cemetery.
They're like, yoga, walk my dog, bike. I'm like, all right, you guys are doing great. We're smoking cigarettes and drinking Bloody Marys.
On this guy.
Yeah, we're straddling like a plot right now.
Oh, yeah, we're at the Four Corners.
Oh, shit, I got a caramel cookie if you guys want some. It's a little smushed.
Caramel cookie, like weed cookie?
From Rye Brew.
Oh, I heard you say it earlier, I got a cookie in my pocket, and I immediately assumed it was an edible.
No, but that would be fun. All right, my turn.
Yay!
Let me, I gotta be dramatic and light a cigarette for this.
Yeah, I wanted to read that with more gusto.
I need to read mine with gusto because there's a lot of, you do the work.
Yeah,
you'll be able to tell within the first paragraph. You'll be like, wow, they really just didn't want to write descriptors. Okay. So you have to figure it out. You have to imagine it. Yeah, so I mean, with the help of this vodka, I may be able to read this a little bit more dramatically.
Yeah,
I did put a good amount in both, because I poured it in there without ice first, and I didn't realize how big the mason jars were, and then when I poured the Bloody Mix in, and you were, like, outside, I, like, panicked. I was like, throw, like, 3 ice cubes in here. I was like, this is a lot of vodka in
here. Oh, good. Good to know. Just once again, this is a comic book idea that I've had for a really long time. So if anybody wants to draw this up for me and become billionaires, Meddling Kids is the shit. So this is called Meddling Kids. Imagine a small town. Any small town. No real industry left there, but boy are the houses cute. A couple stoplights and a few pubs with some of the best food you'll ever eat. Now imagine 2 decent metal dudes, each with a beer and a shot and not much else to do. Let's think up one of the dudes as average height, who never quite grew out of his lankiness with a farmer's strength about him. He rarely trims his long brown curls, but because they just sort of roll. He's got a no-name beer alongside a shot of Beam, sporting his faded denim with patches from the first time he saw, insert whoever, something sludgy. Let's call him Rick. Next to Rick is a similarly dressed cat with a more straw-colored hair, the type with a bit more red in it, hair that's grown well past his shoulders. He wears one of those brutal 4-sided long sleeves we're all after, the kind that a church-going mother may call the bane of her existence. This guy is soon to reluctantly take a shot of Beam and chase it with a Pilsner. He's been really into Pilsners recently. He's just over that whole hop-heavy phase. Call him Johnny. They lift their shots, clink, for the ones above, the ones below, and the bar, and they shoot. Johnny gives a wince before sipping his Pilsner. Rick looks down at the bar, then over towards Johnny and asks, "The fuck are we gonna do, man?" "I don't know, but I want pizza. The bartender's dead, and I don't feel like breaking into the liquor cage right now. I'm not even sure where the bolt cutters went." Rick agrees. "I'm hungry too, dude." They stand up. Their boots likely would have hit the ground at the same time, if not for that second-to-last shot. Rick proceeds to slam the rest of his beer and shoves a second one in his bag, just in case. Rick reaches for a bat he fashioned recently, one with a saw blade and barbed wire wrapped tightly. They collected the barbed wire from a local church. Not sure why the hell it was there, but hell, it was useful. Rick began to make his way across the bar floor, doing his best to avoid the blood and, more importantly, avoiding the bartender's decaying severed head and, well, the rest of their body. "Shit's gross, dude," mumbles Johnny as he follows his buddy closely with an impressively sized sledgehammer gripped tightly. They each have a handgun or two on them at all times. Their next-door neighbor was a pretty big gun nut, but they were pretty low on bullets. It's surprisingly hard to find ammunition in a small town 20-some days into the zombie apocalypse or whatever the fuck was going on. What was going on? What is going on? Batman had to kill a lantern fly.
Still listening. I just didn't want to disrupt.
What was going on? Great question. What we know is that a few weeks ago, members of their town, like all of them, began to feel ill. And just as with any good zombie movie, they changed. Quickly. They craved human meat. Tartar, of course. Their skin rotted as their organs liquefied, though significantly slower than any actual corpses would. With such slow decomposition, these half-dead fucks retain functional movement, for the most part, albeit clumsy as hell. The guys weren't sure what the fuck was going on, but they knew for a fact they felt fine in comparison. They continued to the door. "Damn, man, it's bright as hell out here," Johnny says, blocking the sunlight with his one free hand as his eyes adjust to the midday sun. Rick is already making his way towards Carmine's. "Yeah, I'm sure it's just the sun and not the fact that the whiskey works." They usually head towards Carmine for late afternoon pizza because Rick worked there a few years back and those cheap fucks couldn't possibly have been bothered to upgrade or update any of the equipment, and this wasn't time for learning new equipment. They were hungry as hell. The guys had thought ahead and took advantage of the bar devoid of people to roll a horse leg sized joint and took turns smoking on the way to the shop. Alright, they shorted it halfway through because, shit, they can't smoke the way they used to. Plus, there were half-dead fuckers constantly trying to eat them. But they were a bit more at ease since they fortified their smoking route. And by that, I mean the route from the bar to the pizza shop. Remember that holy barbed wire? Yeah, there was a lot of it. And Rick and Johnny found out they weren't half bad at carpentry in the last few weeks. I mean, the 2x4s left at the hardware store weren't a permanent solution, but they had held for a week and they felt pretty decent about it. They hadn't found a great way to lock up the bar or Carmine's from the outside, but they were pretty used to a 32-point check of the vicinity when they arrived. All right, not really, but they did usually do a pretty good job making sure there weren't any deadite-esque fucks walking around it when they changed locations. So they entered the pizza shop, but it became painfully obvious that they were not alone. Why? Well, as most people would do when a door is opened and they aren't expecting company, a person, a zombie, I'm not sure what to call it, looked up from behind the counter. The dude was Thor. They recognized Thor in the same unsurprising way that they recognized most of the people they had killed in the last few weeks. But as Rick started towards Thor, he realized something was different about him compared to all the others infected. As he steps, Rick's feelings are confirmed. Thor throws his hands up quickly, lets out a groan, and then lowers his hands and grabs his left shoulder. As he rubs his shoulder, he mutters, "God damn it, I pulled another fucking muscle. Holy shit, that hurt." Rick lowered his bat and cocked his head at Thor. Those who have changed have lost their ability to talk, predictably, as vocal cords decay fairly quickly. He thinks an obvious thought to himself. He must be different. And with this thought, he involuntarily utters, "Bro, you look like shit." Thor shrugs a bit. "Yeah, man, I feel like shit." Rick instantly feels like a dick and attempts some damage control with a quick, "Sweet shirt, though, dude." But who was Rick kidding? He couldn't read that logo. He just felt bad. Thor was a good dude. He met him at one of his cousin's basement shows a while back. They talked about cabs or some shit and had run into each other a few times since. Johnny steps past Rick, still pretty reluctant to get too close to Thor because he really does look like he's becoming one of those things. Johnny, with no risk of sounding cliche at all, asks, "You feeling okay, man?" His confused look spoke volumes. "I'm not sure. All I know is I'm still fucking hungry and all the produce in this goddamn town is gnarly. So I'm making a pizza. Another pizza. A third pizza." After a pause, he continues with, "Y'all want in?" "Fuck yeah, dude," the two responded. Again, this would have been in unison if not for that second to last shot. "But you really do look like shit, man," Johnny sneaks in as he makes his way back behind the counter. Rick and Johnny are thrown off by this whole situation, and they know they must keep their guard about them. So as they place their primary weapons down, they ensure they both still have their side blades. They proceed to make themselves Scooby-Doo levels of pizza, the works, chop suey style. Thor leaves the meat off his pizza, though. To this, Rick and Johnny poke a bit of fun. "Man, the world is ending and you're still sticking to that whole no-meat thing? What a move," Johnny said shamelessly as he begins eating. Thor drops his head a bit and responds, "My boyfriend and I went meatless together a while ago, and I'm not changing that because he's, well, yeah." The mood of the room changes, but Johnny does not pick up on this as he progressively drops his guard while eating. Shoveling slice after slice in his mouth, he's really showcasing his chewing technique. With a mouthful of food, he asks, "Thor, how'd you get in here anyway? The back door was sealed off last week, and the entrance was skillfully surrounded by fortified fencing, courtesy of yours truly. A healthy brag for decent work." Thor looks at the guys with vacant eyes, not because he didn't feel anything, but because he was half dead. And he said, "It wasn't really hard. There were a few loose boards, and I just sort of walked through." Both Johnny and Rick's faces dropped, this time now perfectly in sync. Shit, what are we gonna do? They stashed some tools in the bars last week, so they could fix this. They grabbed their weapons and looked at Thor in almost a comic book fashion and said, "You in, bud?" "Yeah, just give me a second." Thor goes into the kitchen for a few minutes and comes back with a meat tenderizer and a chef's knife. As if on cue, the three look up to the alleyway and see a few of their neighbors effortlessly crawling through the fence. Which should have been no surprise, Thor was a large dude. They approached a mini horde with no real plan and they quickly fell into some sort of formation, but that didn't last long. Rick springs ahead and hits Mrs. Johnson dead in the temple with a saw blade. But something gets stuck. Probably the blade or the fucking bent-ass nails. The bat falls to the ground with the corpse. He stomps on her lifeless head and tries to free the bat, mumbling, "Fucking A, man," frustratingly. Johnny lets out a bit of a snort and says, "That's what you get for choosing aesthetic over functionality, you fucking nerd," and promptly swings his sledgehammer over his head like a battle axe and cracks the back of the one creepy neighbor with that mustache that never grew in quite right. He hits him so hard that the brain splatters back onto Rick as he finally gets his bat free. "What the fuck, dude?" Rick exclaims. "My bad, Rick," Johnny said with a purely sarcastic smile. Pan back to Thor, looking on with amusement. He grabs his mallet and knife. Slow heavy metal music starts playing in the background. Rick breaks through with a scream. "Go get the shit, Johnny. I got these washed up fucks." Thor runs to stand as sort of a guard to the fence, wasting those few stragglers trying to make their way through the weak point. It is as if they pay no mind as he stabs them up through their jawbones and makes waste of their face. The neighborhood numbers have gone down significantly recently for obvious reasons, so they only really had a few more folks to deal with. Johnny runs towards the bar. The bar itself is a bit of a hole in the wall, so you can see every corner except the basement as you walk in. He runs into the door, does a quick scan, breaks to the right where he stashed some tools and extra wood. He grabs as much as he can and stumbles back outside. He hastens as he approaches the breach where Rick was kneeling on the back of a local minister, gripping his hair to steady the minister's head as he stabbed repeatedly at his brainstem. Johnny throws down all that he is carrying next to Thor, save for his sledgehammer. Thor quickly realizes his new role. He bends down and picks up to grab a piece of wood when he sees a half of Mr. Goldstein crawling towards Johnny's ankle. If Mr. Goldstein's mouth could water, it would be. Thor lifts up the 2x4 and slams it down vertically on Mr. Goldstein's head, splattering brain matter once again, but this time on Johnny. Johnny looks up at Thor, and in his best cool guy voice, he says, "Groovy." Proceeding with the corniest wink and finger gun combination you can imagine, Johnny swings around and takes out the knee of a lesser-known neighbor, a person I honestly forget the name of, as Thor begins the refortification. Johnny and Rick both work to keep the unknown half-corpse man down, taking turns whacking his head and body. Just one more to go. Dick Smith, the gym teacher at the local high school. Real mean, cliche 80s gym teacher type, and a really big dude. As Thor finishes hammering the last few nails, Dick approaches. The three come together in a tight triangular formation and move forward as Dick mindlessly wanders towards them. An almost perfect homage to Office Space begins, as they begin to beat Dick like a busted printer at a dead-end job. But we all know, he probably deserved it. He was a gym teacher. They lower their weapons, blood splattered and covered in brain goo, and they honestly look pretty cool. They begin to feel the weight of eating right before physical activity, and hell, they just killed about a half a dozen of their neighbors, so they all agree it was time for a drink. "Oh, Rick, guess what I found while I was grabbing surprise," Johnny says as they all make their way through the door of the bar. Johnny picks up the bolt cutters and hands them to Thor. "Want to do the honors? We all drink whiskey. We drank all the whiskey up here. Liquor cages in the basement. Anything brown works, bud." Thor shrugs, but almost enthusiastically. He hadn't had a drink since he began to feel ill, and he still hasn't quite figured out what was going on, so what the hell? He takes the bolt cutters and heads down towards the basement, returning a few minutes later, liquor in tow. They pour it around and crack some no-name beers. Johnny tries to pour another Pilsner, but the keg ends up kicking, the last keg of Pilsner in the basement. He settles for a no-name beer. "Thanks for your help back there, dude," Johnny says kindly to Thor, "but next time there's a loose board and what looks like a fortified wall, maybe patch it up before lunch? You clearly had time. Those hungry fucks didn't seem to care about you. And you know what? Cheers to that." They clink their shot glasses together, to those above, to those below, and to the bar. They slam them down as the door begins to creak open. And as one is wont to do, when a door opens and you're not expecting company, they look over almost in sync, but with Thor a little bit off time. A familiar face pops around the edge of the door, but the three are already all standing, ready to go, weapons in hand, still reeling off the adrenaline of the last hour. The person quickly closes the door in an attempt to protect themselves. A stern voice comes from behind the door. "Jesus Christ, guys, it's Emily. Fucking chill." The three lower their weapons as the door opens. A tall girl is revealed in the window with fading blue hair and a crossbow in her hand. "I see you didn't clean up the bartender yet." Rick responds, "Nah, but we did run into an old buddy while on a pizza run. Oh, and a new bottle of whiskey has arrived." Emily throws down her backpack, which lands with a thump. Sighs, "Well, good." As she confidently moves over to the bar floor where the bottle is, she pours herself a shot, to those above, to those below, and to the bar. She takes a seat next to the guys and says, "Dude, your friend looks like shit." All three of them respond at the same time, "We know." And they slam their drinks in perfect unison. Finn.
That's so cute. I love that.
Yeah?
Ooh.
I'm going to write more of them because there's a whole fucking thing. It turns into a whole universe.
They're so cute.
I love that. That was really good. You're a really good writer.
Thanks, dude. I've never written fiction before. That was really fun.
That was awesome.
Hopefully we get more time to do shit like this because it was a really good time.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to, seriously, if anybody wants to draw up that comic book for me, I it expands into this whole government conspiracy.
Ooh, you just have these ideas. This is good.
I didn't tell you about the rest of this.
No.
Now it's on the thing, so I'm clearly the first one to come up with this idea, so I can say it.
Suck it.
But it becomes a government conspiracy where the government quarantines off different parts of the population, like different parts of the U.S. specifically, and tests apocalyptic theories. So, like, they're in the zombie apocalypse universe. Emily's dad works for the government.
Oh, shit.
And then you go on Bill and Ted-esque adventures throughout all these apocalyptic situations.
Shit. I love that.
Yeah, right. So happy salad.
Yeah.
I'm not even done my drink yet. No. That was really fun, though.
That was a lot of fun.
I'm going. I'm reeling.
It was awesome.
Guys. It was good.
It was good, guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, happy festivities. Happy Mischief Night, happy Samhain, happy Halloween, happy whatever.
Yeah, if this comes out before the 30th, come to Love City for a fucking spoopy dance party. Also, one of my coworkers hates when I say the word spoopy, so I want everyone to do it.
Spoopy.
Spoopy.
Why do they hate it?
Because they think it's dumb, but I'm like, it's so scary it makes you poop, and that's fun.
I'm into it. All right, well, I guess we'll wrap up this recording.
Pasta, there's some, pasta.
There's, yeah, pasta, asta. Asta, la pasta. There's cars and people that are now out and about. And I think we're going to go explore this graveyard a little bit more and probably
take stupid pictures and videos for you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. You can probably find our stories up on the Patreon and all the other fun things that we do. You can find us on those internets at area_215 on Instagram and everything else. Email us some fun things if you want.
Yeah, that's area215pod@gmail.com.
Subscribe
to our Patreon. We do fun shit.
Yeah, Patreon, fun shit.
Whole bunch of different levels. Most of them are cheap. Actually, they're all pretty cheap.
All right, guys. Well,
no, wait. If you do want to see any of what Laurel Hill offers, because they do have, like, events here sometimes. We, like, walked by some yoga and shit earlier. There's, like, they seem to be doing a lot. They also have, like, drum circles and different private events. You can just go to laurelhillcemetery.org. For that. I believe you can donate to them there as well. The Laurel Hill Cemetery. It's Friends of Laurel Hill and West Laurel Hill Cemetery. I think you can donate to them directly because they're the nonprofit organization. But yeah, you can find all that info on their website as well as a better history than we gave you.
Yeah, and the sources for this website, the sources for this podcast and all of our stories is our brains.
My brain came up with that story.
And the inspiration from zombies and slasher films.
Yes!
And the Philadelphia Flyers can't sue us.
No, they
can't.
All right.
We said Gwitty the whole time.
Gwitty. Gwitty. All right,
Batman's climbing a tree.
All right, this is Sam Hot Vodka.
This is Aaron the 2-Inch Punisher. Ave Satanas, fuckers.
See you guys in another dimension. Hasta la fucking pasta.
Pew, 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 pew.
Pew.
How long was that?
Oh, it's still going.